I am Plant Online. This is thecommentary.ca. I am joined now by Andrea Gunridge. She makes her literary debut with The Sudden Disappearance of Seetha, which has been described as a sweeping novel, wonderfully accomplished and sparkling. It is a story of love, rivalry, family, corruption, and friendship set in Guyana, where the author's parents are from. Its culture and politics have influenced her writing in the story of Neela, who as a girl fought her brother Navi for attention. Neela discovers early on in the book that her daughter Seetha has just been kidnapped. It is also a story of jealousy, hope, and perseverance, friendship, and the importance of family and the power of forgiveness. Andrea Gunridge is a community outreach worker for the Metropolitan Action Committee on Violence Against Women and Children in Toronto. The book is published by Knopf and retails for $29.95. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Andrea Gunridge. Good morning, Ms. Gunridge.
Morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Oh, no problem.
Your parents immigrated from Guyana when?
In the 70s, the late 70s.
And you were born here?
That's right. I was born in Toronto.
You have a sister, do you?
I do.
The immigrant experience, and I guess you got that from your parents, is that something that influences the story?
Oh, absolutely. Even though it's based in this fictional Caribbean town, really you see people's interactions with, quote-unquote, overseas. And the different reasons why people access this, whether it be for jobs, whether it be for school, and ultimately just a desire to have a better life. But, you know, the question is, does it actually turn out better?
And in your parents' case, of course, it turned out pretty good, didn't it?
I think it did, yes. I think in some ways I think it was wonderful for them and very important. There were a lot of things going on in Guyana politically that made it difficult to live there. But in other senses, too, I think there was a great deal of difficulty relocating. They had such a love for Guyana. They were so proud of where they came from, and they never intended when they were younger to leave. So I think it was a bittersweet kind of reality.
Is it a universal story in the sense that, I mean, a universal success story, I should say, in the sense that does it matter where you come from, which country you come from, and if you immigrate here, it's automatically successful, or do you find that there are difficulties? And if so, what are some of the difficulties? I guess when you look at it in this part of the country, it seems that we get there's a lot of gun violence, mm-hmm. gang violence. Some people would blame that on sort of the immigrant experience. It's not necessarily that, and in this current situation that we're in here, we don't know really what it's about. I mean, we can't really say that it's immigrant gangs fighting with one another. But in terms of where one comes from, do you think that coming to Canada automatically means success? I mean, you work with women and children against violence. You work in that sector. Do you find that it's getting long-winded here, I realize. I feel like I'm on cable TV. Do you find that there is success? Does it matter where you're from, I guess?
I think it definitely does matter. Unfortunately, I don't think that every person who comes to this country, especially in latter years and more recent years, has had an experience of success. I think it's very difficult to uproot yourself in any case. But I think that there are a lot of political and social realities going on today that make it very difficult. And a lot of immigrants, statistics show, are coming to this country and staying in poverty or are becoming impoverished as they come here. And there's all kinds of other statistics that show that it's difficult for a lot of people to find jobs in their field. They come to the country thinking that they will, with an implicit promise sometimes that they will, and they don't have it. And it's often their children who then have an opportunity to move forward. The other problem is that we see, of course, in our society we have a wonderful country, but we still have issues of poverty and racism, and they're still hitting us. Definitely you see with many communities who are indigenous to this country, their experience, you know, as people of color, as Aboriginal people, has not been positive all the time. And I think that some of those racist issues and some of those you know, poverty issues still need to be addressed. So I think that we have a while to go, a way to go before we can say, you know, people who come to this country have a totally positive experience and it's totally success. On the other hand, though, there is movement in positive directions, and that's why I feel very hopeful. Certainly in the work that I do with violence against women and children, you know, we see violence happening in all communities. not just immigrant communities, but definitely, you know, mainstream Canadian communities experience it too. It's something that it kind of crosses all boundaries. At the same time, we are seeing a lot of people talking about the issue of violence against women and more consciousness being raised, and I have a lot of hope that that's going to move forward and things are going to get better. And certainly if we address issues of poverty, that's going to help women directly so that they don't have to stay in violent situations.
Did you always write?
No, I didn't, actually. I had really very little aspiration to write until I started this book. I think my whole writing was around more kind of political issues and more doing the work in the community that I was doing. But then when I started realizing how story can be used to tell really real things that are going on, but in a very accessible way, that's when I started really getting excited about the idea of writing a novel, yeah.
And how long ago was this?
This is about 4 or 5 years ago.
And the story of the book, your work obviously it compelled you to do that, mm-hmm. right? How does Guyana's culture and politics influence your writing?
Well, I think it definitely does because it was very strong in my life. My parents made every effort for us to be connected, even though we weren't living in Guyana and we didn't really get the opportunity to go very often. So it became very strong in my life because of their influence. But also, I think a lot of the issues that are going on in Guyana and have gone on for many, many years really point to very current realities, whether it be kind of the way our world works in terms of money and economics, the way political realities play out in people's individual lives, the way that community and family are still completely important to us and still an influence in everybody's lives. I mean, those kinds of themes felt so universal to me, it made perfect sense to talk about it in terms of a Caribbean or Guyanese context.
How often did you go back growing up?
I actually only have been back once. I went back maybe about 5 years ago or 6 years ago, and not for too long, so it's actually something that I want to do more of now.
And did you have to do a lot of research for the book, like in terms of, like, not in terms of, I guess sort of in the context of what makes the book seem like you know Guyana pretty well,
mm-hmm.
in terms of its culture and so on? Did you
have? Yeah, I mean, there were certain amounts of research that I had to do and have done. In the past, I've taken a number of Caribbean literature and Caribbean politics courses, and I've read a lot of Caribbean discourse. And a lot of the things that I talk about in the book are not specific to Guyana, and that's why it's kind of a fictionalized Guyana. I never say Guyana in the book. It's not really intended, it's not supposed to be Guyana per se, but it is supposed to be based off the themes. And the themes are so very common to Latin America and the Caribbean. So kind of my broader education on that helped me and influenced the way that the story went, but also some specific readings and analyses of what happened in Guyana from since, like, the 40s till now, and kind of the political upheavals and difficulties that many Caribbean and Latin American countries went through. Those are very specific in the book as well, and I kind of allude to them, although I don't get into them in much detail at all.
The central character in the book, her name is Nila.
That's right.
She's the mother of Sita.
Mm-hmm.
And she finds out early in the book that her daughter, Sita, was kidnapped.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's some discussion about some of the choices that she made that perhaps brought this about. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to us about some of those without giving away the book?
Oh, sure. I think that there's a lot of things going on with Nila. A central part of her character is her rivalry with her brother, and that desire to be something more than she is. Unfortunately, she doesn't ever feel that she measures up. Her brother is a genius, and she is not even close to being a genius, but she does have her own unique abilities and talents. The problem is that they never outshine her brother, and she is so obsessed with, you know, being the star and kind of being a rival to him, that she can never appreciate what she has and never really develop what she has in a positive way. And of course, whenever you're in a situation where you're fighting against somebody in particular, or you know, just looking to one-up somebody, you make stupid choices and you make bad choices. And she definitely made a bad choice by leaving her town and going into the resort development in the rainforest called Eden. And, you know, you see a lot of those kind of regrets over how she's decided to live her life come out. So definitely the things that she does, the mistakes she makes, is kind of what we all do. The problem is that because of her reality, the impoverished reality that she lives and the lack of resources that she has, every little bad decision actually ends up being quite disastrous. And that is very different for those of us who have resources and who have privileges. When we make bad decisions, oftentimes we can get out of those bad decisions and we don't have to deal with the awful consequences. So I really wanted people to see that as well, that when you're vulnerable on many different levels, every little mistake you make is going to have dire consequences.
Now, the book speaks to sibling rivalry. Mm-hmm. Is this something that you're familiar with?
I think in some ways. My sister and I have a wonderful relationship, and we always had a great relationship. But definitely, I can remember as a child wanting to kind of be the star at times and needing to, you know, battle it out with her as a child. Luckily, we didn't let it get as far as it gets between Neela and Navi.
How old is your sister? Older than you? Younger than you?
She's older than me.
Jeroen, is that how you pronounce his name?
That's right.
He's a bit of a thug, a gangster, right? Mm-hmm. And he and Neela meet up, mm-hmm. and they have a relationship, and I guess he sees his father.
Mm-hmm.
Did this, I mean, how did you come up with this character and some of the traits that he has?
It's interesting. A lot of people have asked me that question, and I think, you know, that he's kind of a mystery in some ways. He's not all bad, and especially in the beginning when you see his relationship budding with Neela, he doesn't seem like a terrible guy, and he doesn't seem like, you know, that thug that he becomes. But there is a reality, again, with him, that you get the sense that he's never been good at anything, or he's never really had much success in anything, so that when he goes to this resort and he starts getting, moving up the ranks of power, informal power, and starting to influence people, you see that kind of getting to his head, and I don't think it's because he's a bad guy or has, you know, evil intent. I think it's the one time that he's actually good at something, and he let it go too far, and he let it kind of get into his head and make him very controlling. So I think, again, you see that kind of reality where with somebody doesn't really have that many resources and doesn't have that many success in other areas of their lives, whether it be because they're impoverished or there's not opportunities where they're living, you can see how any little thing then can become this big issue and can get dangerous for them and for others around them.
Do you see yourself in any of the characters?
Oh, definitely. I think I see myself in all of the characters in some way, but definitely in Neela in particular, yeah.
And what is it about Neela that strikes you about her? I mean, as the writer, do you consciously put yourself in her, or do you write her because you want to create someone that you like, perhaps, or that you have a certain affinity for?
Well, actually, when I began to write her, what really stuck out to me is that she wasn't a very likable character. You see that rivalry that she has with her brother and just the selfishness that she has sometimes. Doesn't really hit you as this wonderful thing in the beginning as a reader, I think, and as a writer as well while I was writing her. But what I did love about her and what I started to see myself in was really her regrets and the way that she deals with her regrets and kind of the way that she wants to be something better than she is. And I understand that, and I definitely understand the concept of regrets. For me, that was really important in the book because I think it's very important for all of us to be able to claim our regrets and do something positive with them. You know, I've said this to other people before, that a lot of people talk about living their lives with no regrets, and I just think that's a silly thing.
I think it's
very dangerous.
Isn't it?
Yeah, impossible for sure. And sometimes it's kind of a ruse to say, I have no regrets. I really believe that. it's what we do with our regrets that's really important. And that's where it leads to that forgiveness that you mentioned at the beginning, you know, being able to look at our regrets, how we've hurt others, how others have hurt us, and being able to forgive and build better relationships. This is so important to me. So I saw that definitely in Neela, and I see that in myself as well.
And your day job, if I can call it that, mm-hmm. is what?
I work at an organization named METRAC, and that stands for the Metropolitan Action Committee on Violence Against Women and Children, as you mentioned. And we're a Toronto community-based organization that deals with issues of violence against women and children. We look at it from a preventative educational lens, and I do community outreach and education.
And so you continue with that today?
Yes, definitely.
You began the story 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. You began writing the book. Did you ever envision that it would be what it is today in the form of this book?
Actually not. You know, I'm quite thrilled every time I think about it and look at the book finished. I started it because I got a little grant from the Toronto Arts Council. It was just a beginner's writing grant. You had to just submit, you know, 15 pages of something. So I just kind of did it. As a kind of a hobby, not really thinking that it was going to go anywhere. And then when I started sending out the manuscript, again, not really expecting anything and just seeing what would happen, when I got positive responses from agents and from small presses, I was really amazed, actually, and decided to keep going with it. But it was not, as I mentioned, not my aspiration. My aspiration is always to do community work and to make a difference that way, and in as much as this book can add to that, that's what I want.
This program, The New Face of Fiction, how does this work? I mean, we've heard this for a couple of years now. It's just an emerging writer emerges, I guess, mm-hmm. from the pile of manuscripts that agents and publishers see, and then Random House, what do? They pick one or two of you, and then...
Yeah, that's what they do. Every year they pick a couple of people, or maybe even three people. This year it's three people, to kind of highlight. They're all authors who either haven't published anything before or haven't published a big, like a novel or long stories or anything like that. So they try to kind of highlight this promising writers that they feel will really make a difference in Canadian literature in the future.
And it must be quite gratifying to be part of all that, isn't it?
Oh, it's beautiful. I am so, so pleased and blessed. I feel really, really happy. The New Face of Fiction has launched a bunch of wonderful writers like Dion Brand, whom I love, and Anne-Marie McDonald, and a bunch of big names. So it's really, really exciting that way. But as I mentioned to you, what I really want from this book, more than anything, is for people to just read it and get a sense of hope and get a sense of understanding that things can be better. And so, you know, it's just a thrill to be able to just write something and have it out in the world, and hopefully people will read it and get that, and I'll feel really good about it, you know. So The New Face of Fiction is just kind of icing on top of the already really tasty cake.
And will you pursue this as a career?
Right now, my aspiration is not to do it as a career per se, to continue writing for sure now that I've seen how wonderful it can be and what the response can be. I will definitely continue to do it, but my heart will always be in community work and most likely in working with women and trying to address the issue of violence against women and girls.
I always ask authors whenever they're on about reading and their sort of reading habits. Do you find that it's indispensable to your writing?
Oh, absolutely. It's very, very important to look at what other people are doing and the ways other people are pushing the envelope and maybe some things that are missing. What are the gaps in literature today, and be able to kind of address those in your work. It's not a good idea to write always in reference to something else, but it is so enriching to be able to do that and just see how other people have done a good job at it.
Andrea, I appreciate your time today. Congratulations on all of this, and continued good luck with the book.
Thank you so much.
The book is called The Sudden Disappearance of Seetha, $29.95 from Knopf. AndreaGunridge.com is her website. Andrea Gunridge on the line. I'm Joseph Plana.